Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, Naughty Monkey. Welcome to the show. This is Sex Nerd Sandra with a soft A, like you're deep throating. Ah, yes. Hi. Welcome. This episode, I was fanning out so much because I got to interview Kevin Allison of The State. Now, of course, he's been doing lots of amazing work since, and I'm a big fan of his storytelling show called Risk. It's a podcast as well. You should check it out. I was in New York for less than 48 hours recently, and I was lucky enough to get him to somehow convince him to come into my hotel room to talk about what's going on in his life. And I learned so much. I can't wait. We talk about erotic hypnosis. We talk about, kinky rut, sex therapy, kink camp. We talk about that, Catholicism. I will say, though, there is a trigger warning I felt I should tell you about. I think that we will be talking about a certain amount of tokenization of Asian men, yellow fever, and some perceptions about what that group might be going through in society. And I just wanted to say that, just remind you that this is someone's feelings and experiences, and it is valid. And I trust you to know these things and be able to tell the difference between when I talk to an expert in a field and when we're talking to someone about their story and their feelings. So I just wanted to make sure to check in with you about that, because there will be some of that coming up. It's funny because being from the sketch group, The State, one of my favorite sketches was The Jew, The Italian, and The Redhead Gay. And this is an interview with The Redhead Gay. So trigger warning aside, I'm sure we'll be fine. And it was such a good, interesting journey. And he's such a good storyteller. Oh my goodness. I don't know if you'll observe this, but I was pretty impressed. Hey, let's see. What else? Oh, a few dates. I will be going up to Humboldt State University, February 27th and 28th, for their annual Sexland, which is their sexual health event. I will be giving the keynote address and a couple of workshops while I'm there. So if you're in the area, come on out. Also, then I will be going up to Ashland, Oregon, which is just above the California border. If you're around in that area, somewhere hiding, clinging to a redwood, hey, come out, because I want you to. March 1st, I'm teaching at Love Revolution. It's a cool sex-positive boutique there. I'll be teaching oral for everyone. It's an oral sex class, pulling from my Snatch Attack and my Balls Deep classes and mixing them up and presenting them that evening. Oral. Let's see. I think that's it, really. Life is good. I hope you're doing well as well. Let's get to this episode. Okay. Have fun. Go team fun.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Do you have any other boundaries?
No, that's really it. Another thing that might come up is my obsession with Asian guys, which is another thing that, like, one of the first things that came up in there. The idea of, like, maybe painting yourself into a corner by becoming too interested in something specific, you know?
Okay, now that you're worried that you're, like, disrespecting Asian guys, but it's more that becomes your sole focus.
Well, it's a little bit of, yes, it's worrying that I am disrespecting them, because many Asian guys are themselves uncomfortable knowing that someone is specifically attracted to Asian guys. You know, there's, you know, I think that, like, for example, as a ginger guy, as a redhead, I don't mind if someone says, oh, I love redheads, because I don't know. That's not loaded. That's not psychologically loaded. To me, at least, it isn't. But one's race or ethnicity comes with a lot of baggage, a lot of assumptions or myths or rumors or whatever. And so people are just not quite sure what to make of it when they find, oh my gosh, you're interested. Every time we get on a train together, you're interested in another Asian guy on the train, you know? My husband, are we recording?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good, good, good.
And of course, there will be edits to some of that. But
my husband used to be totally cool with it. I was married for 9 years to a Filipino guy.
Aha.
And we used to joke. It was this great banter we had because he loved redheads and I loved Asian guys. So we would get on a train. He would immediately start drooling over some redhead and I would go, bleh. And then I'd start drooling over some Asian guy and he'd go, bleh. So that worked for us. But I don't know. It feels like we're at a period in time where people are just thinking a lot harder about issues of race and gender and things like that. And we're becoming a lot more, wait a minute, that stuff's really loaded. What does it really mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about
it?
Well, first a statement. I've thought about this because, you know, I am half Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. but I just hair flipped. But like, I've been trying to figure it out. Like, when is it inappropriate to be into an Asian person myself? And when is it okay? And I feel like it's fine if they find an Asian person, just the look of that person, attractive. Like, that's fine. The problem comes when we assume that there are going to be personality traits or behaviors that are associated with it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the thing.
That, and that also, we were talking before we started recording about me feeling like for the past year I've been in a kinky rut. Like, I had not really considered myself kinky per se until I was 41 years old, and my show Risk, the whole idea is that people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share in public. So I was aware that I was gay from the time I was about literally about 3 years old. My first conscious thoughts were, you know, I like, well, specifically, I like boys' butts. That was the first thing I started really thinking about. But by the time I was 5, I was terrified. I was like, I'm going to have to go to kindergarten in a year. I'll be 6. And I know what the words fag and gay mean. I know that's what I am. And I know that people think that's loathsome and perverted and creepy and defective and lame. So I grew up feeling that way, feeling like there was something inside me that was too weird and fucked up and gross and disgusting. So when people ask, when did you think you were kinky? Well, I guess I always thought it, because for me, growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio in the 70s, which was a very conservative town, just being gay felt like abnormal, right?
I mean, that's kinky.
Yeah. But once I got to NYU, once I was 18 and was allowed to be gay in New York City, I had a very, well, I had a pretty typical, I was a typical college boy going out to gay bars, going to a lot of sex clubs, a lot of anonymous sex. I was so...
In Cincinnati?
NYU. Yeah, okay. Up here in New York. Oh my God.
I got really excited for a minute.
No, you know what I found right away was that I was so terrified. I had spent so many years as a child pining over other boys, but they were always something that was unattainable, like falling in love with a movie star or something. Now here I was in New York, and you guys were there for the having, but you had to converse with them and you had to compete for them. Mm-hmm. It was male competition all of a sudden in a totally different... And I had always been afraid of male competition when I was a guy. I associated it with sports, you know?
Oh, no. Interesting.
So I got into a bad habit. Like, the history of my sexuality once I get to New York is the developing of habits. And one of them was... I would meet my friends at a gay bar, have a few drinks, joke around, and then everyone would be like, well, Kevin's disappeared, which means they would go on socializing, meet someone and go home with them. I would go off to a sex club because I was more comfortable having sex with people I didn't have to say a word to.
Oh, that's like, I joke that I am terrified of the entire mating dance until I get into the bedroom. Then yes, it's fine.
Yes, I totally feel that way. I always say to people, oh my God, let's just get our clothes off and then we'll go to dinner. Because I always feel like going out to a restaurant, you know, starting with the whole dating thing, is a sort of mask, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of a ritual that you do where you're putting your best foot forward, but it's kind of like it's like an audition, you know? Whereas
yeah, it is.
Once you get all your clothes off, you're like, okay, here I am, warts and all, literally. Do you like it? Does it work? And if it clicks, then you're like, okay, let's go to dinner.
Interesting. Yes, flip it.
So, yeah. So I became very addicted to a kind of impersonal kind of sex. And because I had always been so obsessed with butts, I was just interested in rimming. I would just go to sex clubs and zero in on one or two guys and just rim them. And that was enough for me. It was the age of AIDS. So like
safe enough activity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was just like, oh, I don't have to deal with all the, so I never really learned how to fuck. And then when my husband and I met when I was 31, then it was time to actually begin having a real relationship. But it turned out he wasn't so into fucking. So for 9 years...
Just rimming.
Well, no. He actually thought that was kinky. He was like, you like what? You know? It's so funny what some people find kinky and what other people are just like, no, that's one of the basics.
Rimming seems really basic to me.
yes, indeed. But I also became addicted to poppers at that time.
I want to know so much about poppers.
You know, it's I can never remember if they're amyl nitrates or amyl nitrites.
They've changed so much since whenever it was that you could even get the original.
Yeah.
So now it's some other thing altogether.
Yeah. And they say, I've heard people say you should try to get them from Europe rather than the U.S. God only knows what the hell they are. But what they do is that you get it in a little brown bottle that fits in your pocket. And when you're having, say, like, for example, in the midst of rimming someone, I would pull away, sniff some of this stuff, which the fumes create a sort of warm and fuzzy sort of like horny rush that only lasts maybe a minute, you know? Mm-hmm. But the problem is if you like them. I mean, some people, they give them headaches, so they just never go back. Right. Or some people, it doesn't do anything.
It enhances orgasm and it opens your butt.
Supposedly, it also relaxes, your muscles down there.
Wait,
yeah.
You didn't find that?
I don't know, because that's never what I was focused. I was always focused. I mean, I do love playing with my butt, but I have no problem being rough with my butt. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I have no problem like forcing, I'm into pain, so I don't care if it's a little harsh down there.
good to know. Well, you said like I became addicted to poppers, and I was wondering if that was one way you were, because we were talking about of not having ever learned to fuck. I was wondering if that was how you got over the hump.
Oh no, it was purely the sort of inebriation, the sort of like, wow, this really enhances sex, just the whole feeling of it. But the problem is, I've now switched into, now that Grindr exists and I'm no longer married, I've switched to one-on-one, just having people over to my place or going to their place or being in a hotel room like this and having someone over. And
we're in a hotel.
And what happens is, if you're really dependent on those things, you spend a lot of time losing them in the covers and going, where are the poppers? Where are the poppers? And you just begin to feel, gosh, I'm really behaving like an addict here. Hmm. I'm not present to my partner if every 3 or 4 minutes I'm going, where are the poppers? Where are the poppers? And stopping to open a bottle and sniff. It's very compulsive, addictive sort of behavior. And it was just one of the many things that started to make me feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in a rut. There were certain things like feeling like I need a cock ring on just because I like that feeling. Feeling like I need silicone lube as opposed to any other kind of lubricant because that's the only thing. You know, I just became a little bit too painting myself in a corner with what my preferences were. And I've heard Dan Savage say before, you know, if you find that, for example, like, for example, the Enjoy Pure Wand.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That toy, like, is just surefire orgasm for me.
Oh, so cool.
So it's another thing that I became addicted to. And I finally, like, the you know, a couple months ago, I was like, let's just do without it for a month or so. You know, like let's just have orgasms without it for a while. Because it's all in the mind. It's all in your brain. You know, I need this or I can't do without that. And so I'm going through a huge shift right now. About 2 weeks ago, I gave up alcohol and poppers for good.
Wow.
And pot, I'm going to take about 40 days off and then assess with my therapist. I got a therapist through Kink Aware Professionals. And I had dinner with Melina Williams, and she said, when you first talk to him, just say, I hope you're not going to pathologize, and then just list whatever kinks you think are most fucked up. And he immediately responded. He was like, no, I think we're very much on the same page about these things.
Fantastic. So you just 2 weeks ago gave up poppers and alcohol.
Yes.
And only recently did you decide to give up your pure wand.
To put it aside for the most part.
Oh, okay. So, because I'm fascinated by pure wand, lube, cock rings. These all seem like things that are pretty normal in terms of, like, I would never think twice about using a sex toy every time I had sex or wanted to get off. And I would only find myself concerned with that for me if I became frustrated because then I could only get off that way.
Yes. Well, that's it. That's what it became was, for example, I was in San Francisco a week or so, or a couple weeks ago, and I didn't have the pure wand with me because they can be a little hard to travel. They always get stopped in security.
Oh, really? Oh, right. It's like a bludgeoning instrument.
Yeah.
Do they let it through?
They do. But I've heard that they won't let you through with an 11, which is the biggest of the Enjoy products, yeah.
Yeah.
Which really could be used as a bludgeon, yeah.
Yeah, 11 inches of pure stainless steel thickness. Which end you take?
I'll tell you, I can take the smaller end, but that big one has been rather rough on me at times. But, yes, no, I found that I was unable to have an orgasm with this fella, and in my mind it was, oh, because I don't have my pure wand. And, you know, these are little hang-ups. These are little mental ruts, really. I mean, it may not have been the pure wand at all. It may have just been my fear of being without the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that what I'm trying to do is start having sex without some of these enhancements. The alcohol and the pot are huge, and the poppers, that's all huge as far having sex without that stuff and being very used to having sex with it.
I'm raising my hand.
Yes.
And with the poppers, when you say addicted, do you mean like
psychologically? I don't think they're chemically addictive.
Like, weren't doing them outside of the bedroom, were you?
Well, I was doing them to masturbate. So I was sniffing poppers every day for about 2 decades.
Okay, for sex and masturbation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because some people are just, you know, waking up and bacon, you know.
Oh, right. No, in fact, I would have an adverse reaction to smelling poppers outside of sexual situations. I would be like, get that away, you know. Which is weird because I've heard that in Brazil they use them on the dance floor.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, you know, I could see that if I was, like, really into dancing, I guess.
I sniffed them once at a club, and it was It was kind of a fun little buzzy high, mm-hmm. a little headachey. But I just, all I did was stand there and think about my butt. Just be like, what's happening? What's happening?
Well, you know, they're one of those things that I associate so much with 1970s, 1960s and 70s gay male culture. And because I grew up as a kid kind of like watching newspaper articles about Harvey Milk and stuff like that, and oh my gosh, there's this movie The Boys in the Band, and oh my gosh, there's this movie Cruising, like, you know, growing up like stealthily trying to find information about what gay culture was, I could really relate to it. And I could especially relate to how animalistic it was. You know, like once I got to New York, to go into those, like to become a kinkster recently, you know, like coming out and into the kink community, it was a total shock to me to find that that pansexual kink play parties, that people talk. That conversation is allowed. Not just allowed, but like encouraged.
Yeah, it's a total socialized. I see. I see, because the kink community isn't necessarily just gay men.
Right. In you know, first of all, gay men still to this day, but maybe less so, are very averse to socializing with the rest of the kink community in a, you know, I'm constantly inviting young men to come to play parties of friends of mine in the kink community. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. There's going to be naked women there? I can't deal. I can't deal. And I'm like, why? Like, what is that?
I have a theory. And I might be completely wrong. You know how straight guys, when you like show them a naked guy, or they go, ew, gross?
Yeah.
And a lot of that is rejecting the notion that they could possibly be attracted to a man. I think that that little bit of Kinsey scaleness freaks them out.
I think so, too. And I think that there might be, like, I don't know, like this notion that gay sexuality, that gay male sexuality is, like, still kind of hiding. Still, we're still in our own room doing our own little thing. You know what I mean? And to be mixing with others, all of a sudden you feel naked. You know, like you literally are naked.
But lost now the mystery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One gay man once remarked that he was bummed that the underground leather culture was pretty much over.
Yeah.
Because it lost a lot of the spiciness for him. Like, now that everything's cool, not that it's fully cool, but, you know, fairly cool, you just can't really, it's not as erotic for him anymore.
Yeah, well, that, you know, I absolutely know what he's saying. Like, I'm a part of Facebook groups for bears and Asians who are into bears. Bears who are into Asians and Asians who are into bears.
Oh, right. I was reading an interview because I pulled up an interview with you just to do a little prep. And then I searched sex through, and then just it came up like 11 times. And then one of them was all about how now that you're a bit of a bear.
Uh-huh.
But you're, to me, you're like a, I love bears.
Yeah.
So you're like a baby bear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm on the thinner side. And I am starting to try to like even get help. That's another way that I was kind of in a rut, is just like not taking care of myself at all. So yeah, I don't necessarily, I think part of my problem and what I'm trying to address in this therapy is we rely very heavily on labels, you know.
Oh, the gay community?
Yeah. Well, all of us, like dominant or submissive, daddy or twink, you know, all of those labels give us a kind of parameters within which to play. You know, we're like, oh, all right, if I'm telling everyone I'm a submissive, then I never have to like step outside of my comfort zone and try dominating someone, for example.
It's real safe.
Yeah. So for me, I think that part of my problem is that I've got a lot of conflicting and contradictory impulses and don't know what exactly to label myself or how to confidently move forward with a mixed up label. For example, when I was 3 years old, I wanted a baby brother. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my God, I want a little buddy. I want to be like the skipper with Gilligan. Yeah. And then my mother had a little girl, and I was like, oh God, I was so upset. So we fought like cats and dogs all throughout our childhood, but now we're the best of friends. But anyway, so yeah, I just never got over that whole idea of wanting a little buddy. So all throughout high school and college, I was always attracted to the guys who looked younger than their age and who had a kind of a twinkiness about them. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious. I just told this story in San Francisco about my first trip to San Francisco, how my friend and I went there. We were 22 years old in search of the twinks of San Francisco. And you look back at these pictures and I'm like, wait a minute. We were twins. You know what I mean?
Like, who's going to say?
Like, we were in this mindset that we're daddies. You know, we're regular guys. And we're after these, you know, kind of, these smooth, beautiful Adonises who are, like, we gave them all the power. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that it has always been confusing to me is that ultimately what I want to do is dominate, mm-hmm. but worship. Like, to be the dom who takes a beautiful, boyish person uh-huh. and serves them. And, you know, like the Last Emperor.
This sounds like totally a thing.
This is a thing?
I can't think of a label for it, but it seems
service
familiar
dom,
to me.
Dom, maybe? I've heard some people use the term service dom or service top.
I guess, I could ask you a lot more questions about what you hope to happen in this scene.
Uh-huh.
So you're dominating and not, if you're serving them, but you're the dominant, does that mean that, like, is it coercive at all? Or are they loving it?
Generally speaking, I am always very much kind of wanting to please. So there are a lot of young men who get very disappointed in me. I guess I kind of want to be like a daddy coach who's kind of kind of molesting the young man, but for the young man's pleasure. You know what I mean? Who's like, no, just let me do this to you. I think you'll love it, you know, and then being turned on that they do.
Oh, that seems pretty regular to me. At least in male-female fantasies, that seems to be a thing. So yeah. I wouldn't imagine. Well, I would think it would be for guy-guy, it'd be just as...
The funny thing about me is that I think that I'm not addicted to anything more than guilt. I was raised very Catholic.
As was I, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so people in different communities, you know, the gay male community, the kink community, you know, whenever I'm telling them, oh, I'm going into therapy about, you know, the guilt that I feel over being attracted to Asian guys, the guilt that I feel over the weirdness of whether I'm a dom or a sub and how to work that out. And they're always like, what? Like, you know, what are you so worried about? Just relax. Which is one of the reasons that I'm starting to look into erotic hypnosis. Because in the past year, last year, I started trying some new activities which kind of scared me how much. It was kind of like opening a Pandora's box and got kind of obsessed with some new kinks, but that are more on the taboo side, and started to, just feel especially like, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? And not knowing and becoming more and more unsure of how to approach or connect with guys over what I liked. And what I'm doing now is saying, let's address this mm-hmm. rut head on. Let's go into therapy. Let's give up some of these things that I know I'm dependent on, like alcohol and pot and poppers, and clear our mind a little bit. And maybe we can address mm-hmm. this whole dominant anxiety mm-hmm. by looking into another kink, right? Like, for example, what I liken it to is, when September 11th happened, mm-hmm. I was very close to the building when it fell. So the buildings when they fell. So I saw up close what was happening. And so it was, of course, it was traumatic for everybody. But yeah. I remember thinking, that was so destructive. I want to start learning about something creative. Just, I'm going to pick something creative and start obsessing about that. And so I got into jazz, into classic jazz. And
whoa.
It was the weirdest thing because I had never consciously chosen a new obsession. Mm-hmm. But in that case, I was like, I'm going to start studying jazz, and fell in love. And it was really uplifting and gave me, you know, something to be hopeful about because it was such creative music. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that way with hypnosis right now. I kind of feel like, okay, you're in this rut and you have a lot of dominant anxiety. Maybe learning how to hypnotize yourself and learning how to hypnotize the people you play with would be a way that you could kind of get over some of these, all these worries, because it's really your subconscious mind.
I have questions.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to pause because there's a lot of
I know.
Information.
I'm a waterfall.
No, I get it. I love it. I mean, come on. This is amazing stuff. So we're at the point right now. You've mentioned a Pandora's box and you're mentioning erotic hypnosis and you've mentioned your rut and that you're clearing your mind. And I want a little more information about your rut because I'm confused.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I'm hearing that you had a pattern going,
mm-hmm.
and you want to get out of that pattern. And I'm confused as to why a therapist, because it seems like
mm-hmm.
just you understood like, oh, I keep using the same toys, I keep sniffing the same stuff. Let me stop all that for a little bit and mm-hmm. see if anything else emerges. Is this rut at the center of it that you are driven to? You haven't expanded yourself further and discovered anything? Or is it more like you were feeling unseen? Or what's the center of it?
You know what it is that my husband and I broke up 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the first few years, the first, I would say, 3 years afterwards, were a real process of discovery. Because that was the time when I first went to Dark Odyssey.
Oh.
And I did
It's a summer retreat.
Yeah, Dark Odyssey is a kink retreat in Maryland, in a camp in Maryland. And it was really eye-opening for me. It was so exciting and fun and exhilarating to be around people who were getting together to just celebrate exploration, you know? So that really turned me on. And I created the story called Kevin Goes to Kink Camp. It mm-hmm. was a two-part story on Risk. The story itself is probably 90 minutes long, so it was two different episodes of just me. Normally on Risk, we have a variety of people, but some stories are so long, it has to be one.
Yeah.
So Kevin Goes to Kink Camp got a lot of attention. And then there was Beyond Kink Camp, which was what I struggled with at Kink Camp was I couldn't find any other gay men there.
Mm.
There were a couple, but I have this thing where I'm like, no, he's got to be Asian. And there was like one Asian guy there and he was straight. So I feel like I paint myself into a corner with that preference. So
you have a very specific, you only go for
it's kind of become that.
And I'm not judging it. I'm not judging. I'm just, you know, yeah.
It has kind of become that. And I think it has less to do with physical than it has to do with something psychological.
Mm-hmm.
That there's an emotional intelligence and a, I don't know, that I feel like I'm able to be on the same page in a sort of a comfortable, and maybe it's because my first truly intimate relationship was with a Filipino guy, you know, because my husband at the age of 31, that was the first long-term relationship I ever had. And what marked that relationship was that when we first met each other, it was the first time we met on the street, passing each other, smiling on the street. And when we exchanged numbers, I walked away and was struck that I wasn't nervous.
Huh.
I walked away putting his number away and was struck. I was like, oh, I'm not obsessing. over whether I call him first or he calls me first or whether or not anything's ever going to happen with this or whatever. I'm just like, we're going to have dinner. You know, I was just perfectly comfortable. So it might be some residual stuff there where this idea, oh, I can be comfortable and at peace with an Asian guy because I had so many years of being treated poorly, especially by white guys.
That seems better than what I would assume hearing that you're an Asian guy. It seems specific to you and not.
Right, right, right.
You could have imprinted on a, you know, a dinosaur, you know, but it's Asian.
That's funny. But anyway, so I went to kink camp. Mm-hmm. It was like a kind of a eureka moment.
And you had did you know you were kinky before that?
No, I really didn't. I mean, I knew that I loved going to have anonymous sex places. I knew I was a pig. You know, I knew I was like kind of a sex-crazed fiend who loved going into dark places and getting kind of piggy with people. But I did not know anything about, you know, thinking consciously about dominance and submission or pain or anything like that.
So, okay, Dark Odyssey was a huge coming out party for you.
It was. And then to come right on to my podcast. And my podcast really is, Risk is, all about coming out. It doesn't matter if you're coming out about the fact that you attempted to murder your mother or you're coming out about the fact that you overdosed on heroin or whatever. People will tell stories about anything and everything.
I think that's why, like, even though you wanted to do a thing where I told you a story, like, and especially because I want to get, I would love to get out of all the sex, because I tell sex stories at Body Storytelling, and you know, this is my career, and so it's fine. But it's like anything out there, it just feels real dark. Just like it's so. I think that for me, it'll be very much coming out when I do it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think that what happened was after Kevin Goes to Kink Camp, then I did a story called Beyond Kink Camp, which was me feeling like the adventure has begun. Mm-hmm. Now I've had a sort of a eureka moment, and I was like, I'm chasing the next eureka moment. So about 2 months after I went to Dark Odyssey, I get a message on FetLife, which I had forgotten I had created a profile there. I had created a profile there just because my friend had said, if you're going to Dark Odyssey, you should create a profile on this website so people know where to find
you. And FetLife is a fetish, a kinky Facebook.
Yes, exactly. And I got a message one night from this guy who said, well, his name was very, very submissive. It was something like Little Chinese Boy or something like that. And that really woke me up. Uh-huh. He said, you like Asian guys and I like mature guys, so maybe we should get together. So we started talking, and it turned out that this 25-year-old was far more knowledgeable about kink at that point than I was.
Ooh.
So what was so exciting about the whole thing was that he did something that I think I've never been able to match again. He took that image that Asian men have to deal with in America of, oh, it's expected that we're going to be submissive because that's the stereotype, right?
Mm-hmm.
He ended up like taking the bull by the horns and saying, look, I know more about kink than you do. I think I'm going to have to dom here. And so suddenly when we had our first play date together, I was blindfolded. I was tied up. I was bowing at his feet. I remember at one point he made me smell the inside of his shoes. He like forced my face into his shoes. He was like, here, you just smell that for a while I go prepare something else. And I felt like I was like a baby with a security blanket. You know, I was like, oh, this is so comfortable. His smell, you know. And there were certain points where I was like grabbing at his legs because I felt a little uneasy about like I had never really been in this position. So suddenly I was in this place of being the older guy, the bigger guy, the more whatever, established guy bowing at the feet of this beautiful boy.
Oh, I see how it's emerging now.
Yeah. And feeling like the way I expressed it in Beyond King Camp was, I'll be on a subway and I'll see a beautiful Asian guy sitting across from me. And I'll think, wow, I can sense from what's going on in his eyes that he doesn't think he's beautiful. Because that's what America tells him.
Right.
They say you're weird, you're whatever, weak,
made
you're this, that, and the other.
A lot, yeah.
Which is the little guy that I wanted to take care of when I was 3 years old. And that little guy is me. I want to take care of a little guy.
You're a little Asian guy.
No, what it is that I think I want to take care of a younger guy because I know what it feels like to grow up feeling strange and weak and other and weird and all that. And I want to, like, bow before that person's feet and say, no, 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 you are worthy of being a king. You know what I mean?
I feel so emotional. It's hearing you.
But it's hard to find. It's hard to find that dynamic because, you know, I'm supposed to be the daddy, the dom.
I hear you. And I want to put this in context that we've laid out where 5 years you go to Dark Odyssey, then mm-hmm. you have this experience, mm-hmm. and then here you are in a rut, and you're mentioning you want to explore this dynamic that you're mentioning. So is your rut that you've done everything else and you're like, I just really need this thing?
The rut is that was the best thing that's ever happened to me in BDSM.
And oh, you peaked early.
I peaked early is exactly what it is. That was a sort of a second eureka moment. Mm. And ever since then, I've been not able to establish good intimacy with guys, not able to get anything happening on a regular basis, and then more and more just giving up and turning to the enjoy to come, you know, mm-hmm. just being like, oh, this isn't working. Let me just come the way I know how to come. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that there's become feeling like I've been relying more and more and more on alcohol and poppers and pot and stuff like that. To deal with the fact that the actual connections I'm making with guys mm-hmm. are not clicking.
And is this where the therapist comes in?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And so it's about your connection with men.
Yeah, it's about how do I have a remarkable experience like that happen again and have it lead into a relationship. I mean, I'm not saying I necessarily want someone to be a husband, mm-hmm. but I've never had someone who on a regular basis, I can say, wow, that was amazing. That, like that guy, he didn't want to play with me after that. He was just like, yeah, after that, he was like, wow. I mean, he himself mm-hmm. was dealing with all of this, am I a dom, am I a sub, and am I straight or am I gay?
Ah, okay.
So he was like, shortly after playing with me, he was like, nah, I'm going to focus on women for the next several months. And that was the end of our thing. Now we still talk to each other.
Oh, I was going to say, like, call him up. Now you know things.
Oh, yeah. He's heard Beyond King Camp. And so we talked to each other. In fact, we were just talking, had a long conversation. He's moved to Toronto.
Does he play with guys still?
Yes, he does. He does. Yeah. But he's still conflicting. He was one of those guys where I was always like, come to this play party. And it was like, oh, God. I mean, the thought of being naked in a place where there are women who might see that I also like men and yada, yada. He was like, I just can't handle all the confusion. And I'm like,
oh, my God. He's more stressed out by how other people see that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, and you should listen to our bisexual episode.
Yeah, exactly. I always say to him, everyone at these play parties walks up to each other and says, what do you like? What's your deal? And everyone is prepared to hear a totally different story from everyone else in the room, you know? Gay, straight, trans, dom, sub, whatever it is, or switchy, you know, people, well, tonight, here's what I feel like.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think it's that, I think that we let our own, we get into our own heads too much, and I think that what I'm trying to do with hypnosis to myself, self-hypnosis, is to say, you know what? It doesn't matter if you maintain an erection. It doesn't matter if you come. It doesn't matter if the scene goes the way you thought it would go. Just in the same way that meditation or hypnosis may go anyway, and you just have to kind of let it go where it will. Mm-hmm. Learn to just start taking things as they come, you know, without stressing out too much about what role am I currently playing or what does all this mean. You know, keep trying to connect. I've had people with me before who, when I was doing all that poppers and all that other stuff, would occasionally say to me, hey, 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 look here. Look here. You know what
in
I mean?
Face, like
yeah, yeah. Like get the eye contact going as if to say, you know, you're a little bit too, you know, you might be making love to alcohol and pot right now instead of with me.
Yeah. Have you looked into mindfulness at all?
No, but that's definitely, that sounds like yet another thing I should explore.
We're going to get you on a self-help plan. We're going to figure this out. No, mindfulness, I mean, you should maybe ask your therapist, but just are you familiar with just the little nugget, like what it is?
Oh, I remember someone once talking about like eating a raisin and just being incredibly present. You know, like eating a raisin in like 5 minutes and being incredibly present to every little nuance of the experience of eating one raisin.
I mean, there is a sensuality to it, like being in your body and feeling everything that you're experiencing. And that's why, like, kink, it's kind of cool that there's this whole, like, don't drink too much when you do it because
yeah.
you can be alive. But to me, the thing that's important about mindfulness is that it's about when you have thoughts – to learn to kind of zoom out from your thoughts and watch your thoughts go by instead of holding on to them.
Instead of thinking you are your thoughts and
right.
your emotions. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So
yeah.
that to me is useful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's similar to in hypnosis where it's like you're told your conscious mind is going to keep coming up with little random things that are going to flit in and out, you know. Little worries or negations or whatever they might be, but your subconscious mind is probably along for the ride here. You know, you agreed to be hypnotized, so your subconscious mind is probably just A-okay with just continuing to go into this.
I have two questions. So first one's short and the other one's long. First, we're in New York City right now. Have you already met every kinky Asian man
thing. That's the whole experience of have I painted myself into too much of a corner? Actually, New York is huge. New York and San Francisco seem to have an unlimited amount of Asian men.
Okay. 'Cause I know a kinky bi Asian guy, and I'm realizing like, oh my God, I should totally see if... Anyway, yeah.
No, at first I thought the same thing, but I think that what you find is that because on my whatever Grindr profile, I will say I'm kinky, you know, and you'll find that a lot of people are curious about it, even if they don't identify with that word. Everyone seems like, well, that could mean anything,
yeah.
and I've got my own little thing, you know, like that they might want to explore. I'm thinking of putting on the Grindr thing now, the profile, saying I'm exploring erotic hypnosis, because it seems like that is also an invitation to, might you want to explore
yeah.
parts of your own imagination that you have yet to explore?
Yeah. Do you have a list of listener available kinks? I'm curious. Like, you've mentioned pain and some dominance.
Well,
I don't mean for you to like give me your entire life story of like every single kink
right.
But like, you know, BDSM stands for six different things. I mean, do you tend to go just for SM, or is it I'm dom sub heavy.
Yeah.
You know, but I am a sensualist, but I'm not much of a pain person, but it's mainly DS is where I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, one thing I have learned is that I'm not too terribly into humiliation or humiliating other people. I'm more, you know, like, for example, I love to spank and to flog a boy, but when he yells, I'm usually yelling louder. I yell out of empathy. So I'll hit a boy and be like, oh!
And when you say boy, do you mean daddy boy or?
Yeah, they're, for me, that dynamic, I mean, you have to be careful because sometimes people think, wait, do you mean underage? Of course I don't mean underage, but it does play out that way. At the age of, I'm about to turn 45, I'm consistently with guys who are half my age. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing to feel guilty about, because people look askance in society at those May, December sorts of romances. It's not that I'm not open to the idea of dating someone my own age. It just always seems to go that way.
No judgment. I know there's so much in age play and I often date people who are much older than me. So
yeah. And I think that, but it is, I think that what I've got to stop doing is I think that what I'm working on as far as Kevin's rut goes, well, first of all, the alcohol and the pot are like obvious ways that one can get into a rut. But on a spiritual and emotional level, I think it's maybe get out of the habit of being so worried all the time and kind of get a little bit more confident about, no, here is what I want, and you know, inviting people to be along for the ride and not being so upset if they aren't. I think that I'm also a little bit like one of those people who's a little bit addicted to rejection, because I grew up with that too, with like having crushes on boys, half expressing them, like in grade school,
right.
And then feeling rejected because of course it wasn't going to happen. That boy was probably straight, and we were in Cincinnati. Yeah,
he was going to realize he was gay in 20 years.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I always felt, and that's another thing. During high school, I was the matchmaker. I was the Dolly Levi. That's a Hello Dolly reference. I helped all the gay guys come out and then watched them get boyfriends while I was always alone.
Kevin Allison. Aww. God, it's amazing. You're the pinnacle of this this fantasy role play that you want to create.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, and it sounds like, this is you're almost like your subconscious yearning to heal.
Yes. Yeah, it does. It does to me.
Have you broken it to your therapist yet about this?
Yeah, totally. He has talked about that. Wouldn't it be interesting because the way that I tend to talk to young guys when we're playing is good boy. You know what? It's very like encouraging and coach-like. He's like, maybe you need a sweet, encouraging, you know, endearing coach in your own head, you know, in order to find all that confidence to, you know, freely be that sort of thing for someone else as well, maybe.
Oh, you need a sumo wrestler daddy.
Yes.
Oh, I can see that.
Or Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, Mr. Miyagi.
Although he was a little rough.
Well, I'm trying to imagine someone who's kind of mirroring you that can overshadow you physically.
Yeah, right, right,
for
right.
For that presence. That's so funny. Just a big, loving Asian man. I wish it's like I wish I were an Asian man right now. So I could just hug you. Just hug you. Make it okay. Kinky rut. What an amazing journey for like healing. I mean, it's I wasn't expecting that, really.
Yeah, yeah. It is one of the exciting, because I've had interviews on kink podcasts before, and every time I sit down to talk about it, I realize, you know, this very much is still a journey. I mean, and stories wouldn't be stories if they didn't have periods of struggle or confusion or darkness or whatever it is. So I guess as a comedian, I'm used to this having a persona of being super friendly and fun and all that. But in this realm of exploring kink, I think we all have to admit that there are some times where you feel like, damn it, I'm kind of stuck, or I'm feeling like I'm in a down place lately, or I don't know what the hell's going on with me. There's a lot of processing to be done with this kind of play.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, you know? It can be bewildering at times, overwhelming at times, but I think it is a good thing ultimately to say, okay, it's time to put some stuff away for a while, try some new things, and clear some space and not get too crazy, because it's an ongoing process.
We can all take a feather from that cap. Is that the saying? I made it up. I'm not sure. I want to ask, we're totally so over time, but I want to ask a bonus question.
Yeah.
How do you hypnotize yourself?
Oh.
And then when we have covered general hypnotism between two people, but yeah, how do you do that?
Well, you know, I haven't learned self-hypnosis yet. I'm first learning how to hypnotize other people.
Okay.
But there's a very common saying in that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, because whoever is doing the encouraging is really just doing that. The person who goes into trance state has agreed to go there, allows themselves to go there, and goes there. So I have not yet started learning about doing it to myself alone, but I will say this. I do a lot of listening to binaural beats and just zoning out. Also, transcendental meditation I've been doing a lot of lately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is probably very comparable, just, you know, repeating a mantra over and over in your own head and silently, and just going wherever, allowing yourself to just kind of zone out on it.
Oh, man. It's so frustrating that you sign a thing where you can't tell people anything about transcendental meditation. Someday I'll go do that. Kevin Allison, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find you in the world?
I am at risk-show.com. That's where the podcast lives. My school is thestorystudio.org.
Oh, I was checking out the website. It looks great.
I teach storytelling. And
I recommend that to any of you who are trying to learn how to brand yourself, date, make a dating profile, a lot of that stuff. Narrative, self-narrative is important.
Absolutely. And then on Twitter, I'm at TheKevinAllison.
Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was so good. All right. Go team fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.